The barbarians of Rome, the Scythians, their economy, and their society. Now, the Scythians in the 7th century BCE lived in a communal tribal organization where social disparities between individuals wouldn't be very noticeable. However, as time went on and the Scythians secured more and more land and wealth, the accumulation of riches started to occur, primarily among the individuals with the higher social standing, who essentially became the aristocracy of said tribe. According to Herodotus, there were different types of Scythians, such as the Gargari to the south of the Ukraine, the agricultural Scythians, and the so-called royal Scythians, who predominantly kept in the Crimean region, an area they referred to as the Great Green Sea. So we don't know exactly how many individual tribes were part of the Scythian cultural group, but we do know that they weren't politically homogenous and that they were made of smaller tribal groups who at some point would answer to a high king who everyone would recognize either by their own volition or by subjugation. Some historians now theorize that the Gargari weren't Scythians at all, but were instead a kind of serf under Scythian domination, and thus had to work for them. This reasoning justifies why they were sedentary and focused primarily on agriculture, something the Scythian nomads weren't very fond of. The royal Scythians were named that way by Herodotus because most of the high kings of the Scythian Confederation came from this tribe. And it tells us that the royal Scythians maintained a dominant position over other tribes during an extended period. It is still unclear if there were periods where there weren't any Scythian high kings, or if the high king wasn't recognized as such by all of the tribal chieftains. Usually a high king from a dominant tribe would rule smaller tribal chieftains, who would then answer to him in a bond similar to vassalage. This royal power was hereditary, and subject Scythian tribes would pay tribute and provide servants to the ruling tribe. Slaves were part of the Scythian society, but the evidence points to them being only domestic slaves and not used for other societal purposes. Furthermore, there is evidence that women would have had more significant participation in Scythian society than their Greek counterparts, occupying important societal roles and also fighting alongside men in the battlefield, thus being revered as great warriors. This is a feature shared by other Indo-Iranian peoples like the Sarmatians, and at least in the Scythians' case, it would influence their pantheon of gods, in which goddesses like Argamasilla may have held a pivotal role in their beliefs. Scholars are not entirely sure if the Inari priesthood would be specifically held by women or only by hermaphrodites. But either way, the Scythians venerated feminine characteristics. This can be seen in Scythian gold art, where they depict humanoids who tend to be feminine. Scythian clothing was unisex, and both men and women wore kurtas, trousers, high boots, and leather shoes, and a tunic with a round neck and long side openings designed for horse riding. The kurtas, loose collarless shirt, would have been made of woolen cloth, hemp, deerskin, or thick felt. Both commoners and aristocrats wore the same type of clothing, but the materials were different. As the Scythian civilization started to become richer, the aristocrats used important materials for their clothing like silk or linen, oftentimes decorated with gold. The gold and precious loot accumulated by raiders and pillages would have reaped great rewards for the Scythian aristocracy. A much more lucrative and significant economic activity would come to them from the Aegean Sea, particularly in the 4th century BCE. The Greek city-states required great amounts of cereal crops, particularly during the Peloponnesian War, and would import them from the Scythians of the Bosporus. The Scythian aristocracy, willing to accumulate Greek wealth, would act as a mediator between the tribes of Eastern European forest steppe, perfect area for agriculture, and the Greeks. The aristocracy reaped excellent rewards from this exploitation of the agricultural Scythian communities, and this economic situation would be one of the forces behind the sedentarization of both agrarian tribes and of the enriching aristocracy, as well as one of the causes of the social graduation of wealth inequality between common Scythian and the aristocracy. Aside from the exploitation of the agricultural Scythians, the royal Scythians also traded products of their hunts and their animal husbandry, including pelts, furs, and other animal parts that were highly sought after by Mediterranean traders. Livestock and horses could have been something that they probably traded with Greek colonies in the Black Sea, since the Scythians were predominantly animal breeders. With the result of their commerce, the Scythians were able to buy precious manufactured materials such as jewelry, weapons, armor, and vases. As a semi-nomadic group of people, Scythians didn't have a centralized currency or financial system. Evidence of Scythian coin production, however, has been found. And Strabo tells us of King Cerulaeus, who ruled in the later half of the 2nd century BCE, minting coins in the city of Obi. These coins would come in two forms, either the primitive dolphin shape or arrowhead currency used for trading before the 5th century BCE, or imitations of Greek coins or Roman denarii, the Roman standard silver coin. They would also use Roman, Greek, or Pontic coins, which they obtained through conquest or mercenary duties. Scythian society was constructed around warfare, and the types of rituals they had and the items they carried to their graves show that being a victorious warrior on the social standing of an individual. Powerful commanders would take many precious items and artifacts to their graves, some acquired in faraway lands, and most prestigious of the noblemen would even be buried with some of their warriors, servants, and horses. Now, I want to point out something here before we get to the standard mantra. There is a historical novel series that's done by Christian Cameron. It's called the Tyrant series, and there are 6 books in the whole series. But the first 2 are particularly important to what I've been talking about, and if you're interested in the Scythians, it's a great way to get the feeling for what it was like. Because what you have in the first 2 books, it starts out with a man named Cineas, who was a gentleman leading a group of Athenian cavalrymen in the army of Alexander the Great, fought at several battles, which of course meant after he was fired by Alexander because he was an Athenian. When he went back to Athens, they exiled the whole group. So he heads off to that town I mentioned, Obi, and he became a mercenary there. And there he meets the Scythians and other people, and this is the time when you have the battle for the empire after Alexander's death. The first 2 books give you all this background information about the Sermonti, the Scythians, all sorts of things, that their religion. He eventually falls in love with one of the Scythian princesses, who's the leader of the Cruel Hands tribe, and ultimately they end up getting married at the end of the 2nd book, and he fights Alexander. And the 2 main battles that are listed in there are of historical background as well. So it's a great way to get the feeling for the Scythians at the time of Alexander the Great, because it talks about the people who settled and were farmers, who the Scythians protected because that extra grain then fed their horses when things were short. So it's a very, very important thing. So I would highly recommend them. The first 2 books are really hard to put down once you start reading them. And the other thing about Cameron's books, he has a significant background on where everything comes from, where his sources are, and an explanation of names and all sorts of things. The first book is entitled Tyrant, Ruler, Puppet Master, and Killer. And then the second one is entitled Tyrant, Storm of Arrows. And then afterwards, what happens is his children then become, one becomes ruler of the Bosporus, and the other one becomes the queen of the Scythians. So the sources for this, other than what I was mentioning from our good friend Mr. Cameron, is the Germanic Peoples, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owen, Civilization of the Celts by Launay, and the Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.